I love the colorful clothes you wear and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair.
Hello, I'm Solazar, and welcome to Good Vibrations Radio, Tools for Transformation, right here on Radio Monterey. Now, quantum physics tells us that we are all energy vibrating at different frequencies, and in Good Vibrations Radio, we bring you information that allows you to change the vibrational frequency of your life. We are your source for everyday alchemy, so you can take the lead in your life and turn it into gold. Good Vibrations Radio is made possible through the sponsorship of Magic for Life, which is the owner-operator of Radio Monterey, bringing you information unfiltered, uncensored by the corporate media. Visit RadioMonterey.com. Take a look at the shows and the hosts and the information they're bringing for you so you can be informed and make better choices and better decisions in your life. In addition, Radio Monterey is also the promoter and producer of the Rhoda Psychic Fair, coming to the Monterey Fairgrounds once again in October 29th and 30th. My chimes are chiming away, but 29th and 30th, so that we can take advantage of those veils between the earth being thin for Halloween and Samhain and All Saints Day and All Souls Day. It's a great time for having fun. So visit rhodapsychicfair.com, get on the email list, and also find out about the ongoing events we'll be doing throughout the year. Speaking of ongoing events, coming up this weekend, we also have the Virtual Psychic Fair. I'll not only be doing readings for those who call in, but I'll be doing a presentation on 2016 on the 21st, which is Sunday, at 2 p.m. Pacific time. So visit the guest page of goodvibrationsradio.com. Go ahead and find the link for the Virtual Psychic Fair and snoop around. Find out if it's something you might want to visit this weekend. You can also find a link in the sponsor link of the rhodapsychicfair.com webpage, since Virtual Psychic Fair is a sponsor of Rhoda, and the Rhoda Psychic Fair is a sponsor of the Virtual Psychic Fair. So there's always a different way of trying to approach something. So take a visit, see if it's something for you. Now, most of you know I love to start the show with the little James Allen, because in 1903, James Allen wrote his fabulous essay, As a Man Thinketh, which he took from chapter 23, verse 7 of Proverbs that says, As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So James Allen wants us to know that what we see and believe inside of ourselves, what we think, is what we are and what we become. If we think positive, we're positive. If we think negative, we're negative. Our present is a direct outcome of our past thoughts and actions. And our future is not predetermined by those past thoughts and actions. It's predetermined by our present thoughts and actions. And in Day by Day by James Allen, James Allen's words have been broken up into a little segment for each day of the month. And for today, on the 17th, he says, persist until. Great is the heartfelt joy when after innumerable and apparently unsuccessful attempts, some ingrained fault of character is at last cast out to trouble its erstwhile victim and the world no more. I love troubling erstwhile victims no more. Trust me on that. But he's really saying when we get to the point where we're able to shift our thinking, to shift our attitude, and subsequently to shift our behavior, we start living and being in a very different way. And one way that Kirilani and I spoke about on Monday when we were sharing the energy of the week and the reminder that February is all about balanced love and the foundation of balanced love is self-love. And what I brought out on that call Monday was that one of the best ways to begin to practice that is take a look at what we say to others and what we say to ourselves, and do as Michael Chase asks us to do with his School of Kindness. Before we say it, say to ourselves, am I being kind? Don't say it after. It may be too late, but say it before. And if what we're about to say to ourselves or to someone else doesn't seem to come from a kind place, then don't say it at this moment. You'll feel better later for not saying things that are unkind, but make sure you're treating yourself kind as well. And today, the Daily Word from Unity says, I express kindness to all. And I was so happy that Unity went out of their way to pre-listen to the show that hadn't been done on Monday, and then prepare their booklet 2 months in advance to synchronistically tie together with the message I was going to bring out. I don't know how they did it. I'm so astonished. I'm fascinated by the ability to do something like that. But in all seriousness, that just shows once again, kindness is never a loser in the game of life. So if we're having trouble with recognizing and identifying our value, our purpose, and ourselves, start by being kind to yourself. Start by being honoring to yourself. Start by learning to love yourself. And that, for me, is a great intro to our guest today. Diane Bischoff James is a best-selling author, speaker, and life reboot coach. She educates clients in the latest techniques for manifesting and transforming their hearts, minds, and bodies for optimal, authentic living. Now, having found herself completely off track, she lost 60 pounds, left a highly successful but exhausting executive corporate career, rid herself of depression, conquered debilitating health problems, pursued her passion as an actress, navigated a healthy divorce, and survived the perils of an addictive relationship, all after 40. She details this in her book, The Brass Ring, which has been featured in OM Times magazine and voted an Aspire magazine top 10 inspirational book. Let's welcome to Good Vibrations Radio, Diane Bischoff James. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
Thank you very much for joining us. Now, for the listeners, you know that normally we have a Wellness Wednesday, and this is a very special event. So I want to just start by jumping in and saying Diane is going to be a speaker for an after-workshop speaker at the Los Angeles Conscious Life Expo. And her presentation is Monday, February 22nd, this coming Monday, from 2 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. So if you're down in the L.A. area or plan to go there, please take a moment to get to Diane's workshops. You can get conference tickets online by going to theconsciouslifeexpo.com, or you can go ahead and purchase them at the door. But Diane, we're grateful to have you here, and as I said when we first connected before the show, reading your book was so frightening to me of all of how you came to the pivot point or ignition point of your journey. Can you share for the listeners about your special reading in 2000 at the age of 38 that became the catalyst for the change of your life?
Absolutely. And what was so interesting is listening to your introduction, it's as if what I went through is living proof of what you were, all the points that you were discussing and all the points that James Allen was discussing. It was amazing. It was just absolutely perfect. Well, what happened is I had synchronistic events right before my 38th birthday. I had a couple people just kind of come to me and randomly say, you should see this woman, Sonia Choquette. And at the time, she was becoming, you know, an up-and-coming psychic. She is, and a reader, and she was in Chicago. And she had had one book out or something like that. She had a couple books maybe at that point. And she wasn't quite as internationally known as she is right now, or now I think she has at least 12 or 13 published works. And I went to see her because I said, you know, why not? This will be a fun present. I was doing everything that I was told to do growing up. You know, get the corporate career, have a successful business. I tried to get as much stuff as humanly possible and went after, you know, that amazing thing called the American Dream. You know, and I got the big house across from the lake, and I had the cutest shoes, and I made sure I had, like, a car that I thought was pretty hot, so I was driving this red convertible. And I was doing all the things, the programming that I'd had growing up. And I also had three kids, and so I was doing the helicopter parenting and running a million miles an hour. So my to-do list never was, like, immense, and I just ran and ran and ran and ran and ran. But I thought, you know what, I'm going to take a break from the running. I'm going to go to this woman. And on my 38th birthday, I went to go see Sonia because she had an opening. It was perfect. Showed up, and I really thought she was going to give me the giant thumbs up. I thought she was going to say, keep going, girl, start your own big marketing corporation, you know, just keep running as fast as you are, and you're going to make $1 million. And so I kind of sat there, and for 1 hour, instead of hearing how gloriously fabulous I was, she said everything about my life was wrong. She's like, wrong man, wrong career, wrong passion area, wrong interests. And she said, you came here, Diane, to find your heart, and you don't even have one. And she goes, and I'm going to tell you something else that nobody else tells you. She's like, you're clinically and chronically depressed, and nothing about your life is your own. You've been running down this road being a mini version of your mother and your father, and you don't even know who you are. And so here I am, this corporate executive in my business suit, in between meetings, going to see her, and I went into like a mini post-traumatic shock. I'm thinking, how is it possible I could be 40, almost 40 years old, and have done everything wrong? And she went on and basically undressed me. You know, she pulled me apart, and she saw every little dirty secret I had ever had stuffed inside, and she threw it out there in her little office onto the carpet, and I just kind of sat there, and I really only asked her one main question. I said, okay, fine, you know, I've done everything wrong, but what happens if I don't do what you just told me? Because she said, you have to be an actor, an author, a teacher, and a healer, and she goes, you got to start writing every single solitary day, because she goes, people are going to love your stories. She goes, your stories are going to help move people. And I was just looking at her like, I'm not writing every day, I don't know what stories you're talking about. You know, but I said, but what happens if I don't do this giant new laundry list you just gave me? And she said, well, you know what? You're going to have to come back here and do it all over again. And I'm like, well, like, what do you mean? She goes, you're going to, you know, pass, die, and come back, and you'll have to start all over. And it was funny. It was because that was the nugget. That was the nugget, Salazar, that got me moving. Because I was like, ah, heck no. There is no way that I'm going to start from scratch and waste this entire life and have to, like, revamp and do this whole thing over again, because it was hard to even get to where I was. I was 190 pounds. She was too polite to say this, but I was grossly overweight. Everything about me hurt. I could barely lift my arms at this point because my shoulders were kind of broken. My feet hurt, my hips, my everything. Every joint you could imagine was in pain most of the time. And, you know, she's telling me, oh, you should be an actor. And I'm thinking, okay, I loved the theater, but I gave it up as a kid because I heard from my dad, very strong German background, ex-military, and he's like, you're not going to pursue that career. That's a terrible career, and I won't pay for it, and you're never going to make it, and so you're going to get rid of that. And so I didn't do it. I dropped it. You know, I dropped it after being the High School Musical superstar. And I'm like, you know, well, I can't do that. I had to do the three things he told me. He said, be an act. You could be. This is what my dad's philosophy growing up was. He told us kids, you can be four things if you want to be happy in this life. And these are the four things that are going to make you happy. He said, you can be an accountant, a lawyer, a doctor, or an engineer. And you get to be one of those four things, and then your life will be good. So my one brother went in pursuit. He's a lawyer. And the other brother, he's a doctor. And I was like, no, I'm the little rebel. So I'm like, I'm not going to be that. So I became a marketeer that really only works with engineering-type companies. So it was really funny. That was my big rebellious move, is that I was going to, like, do, like, a one-off on that. And so we were all pursuing what we were told to do. We were these little scripts that were drilled into our brain. And so Sonia was the one, and I call it my psychic outing, because she was the first to ever call me out on the table, and I was freaked out. I went into my car. It was February. We were freezing. You know, it was like 20 below zero, as it always is here in February, and just sat there for an hour unable to move. I was sobbing. I was just sobbing because how do you fix everything? I mean, it's one thing if, like, okay, wrong job, maybe you should look for a new career, or, you know, maybe you need to enhance your relationship, because I've been married for 16 years. And, you know, it wasn't that. It was everything was off track. So, you know, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. The best of times only in that I had some message that was really important. But, you know, if you're going to hit, she made me hit rock bottom. I think I was kind of having my own internal rock bottom, but on the outside it all looked perfect. So that's where this whole thing started. And as James Allen had said, you know, really, as within, so without. You know, what you feel from within, what you say from within is how you're actually creating your world. And my world was completely off track. So
for most of us, that was more than just even a hitting rock bottom. Like you said, now here you are, you're turning 40, and you've just been told your life is a failure. And then inside you, you recognize the truth of what you've been told. It's not so much to be told it, although we embrace everything negative told to us anyway. But it was also you said, okay, I'm a failure. Where would you recommend? We know how you took your journey, and you're welcome to share that. Where do you start? Everything's wrong. Where do you clean out the bank account, move away, change your name, dye your hair, you know, or where do you start? Because now you're going back into your life that you were just told is a failure, that at a level inside you recognize as a failure. What do you do?
Well, and that was the big challenge. It was a giant, I call it like a steamer trunk full of negativity and bad messages and being off track. It wasn't just the carry-on. You know, it wasn't like a little suitcase. You get to just do a quick fix. The place where I started, and this is what I needed to do, because I had so, it wasn't just the outside that was messed up for me. It was truly the inside. My inside was broken in that I had had a lot. We had moved every few years growing up. Everybody has a story growing up. You know, nobody had the perfect childhood. But in my case, I took everything that had ever happened to me personally. So I didn't have some of the basics. You know, I didn't have love of self. I didn't feel safe. I didn't have the feeling like the universe was going to take care of me, and I didn't have a lot of heartfelt connections. So it wasn't just the outside that was completely off, it was the inside. And so what I tried to do, and the first thing I did after being slightly depressed, and I really went into almost a PTSD kind of thing, I was kind of unable to function for a while, because I went on, I carried on, I had a couple business meetings, and I went home and I just got in bed because I didn't know what to do. So the first thing I did, though, is she gave me some books to read, and I started researching, because I'm a researcher at heart, and I'm a marketeer really at heart as well. And I started reading the books she gave me. I'd always been looking into metaphysics my entire life, but I stumbled onto Abraham Hicks. And she had said, okay, these guys were just up and coming. They didn't even have a book out then. They just had little pamphlets. And so I read into that, and this message just bubbled up. And the message was, and this is kind of summarizing them, what you think about, you bring about, which kind of gets right back to the message you started our show with. What you think about, you bring about. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know what? I can hold on to that. I can fix my thoughts. I'm going to do everything I can to fix my thoughts. So the first thing I did when I started to recraft my life was to notice I had complete stinking thinking. Every message that ever came from inside to the outside was always dark, because that's kind of what I learned. You know, it's the whole eat everything on your plate, because if you don't, somebody's going to starve somewhere else. Well, I believe that. So I, trust me, I was eating everything on my plate and everything on the person next to me plate and my kid's plate. You know, I was eating everything because it was the only thing that made me feel good for the moment. So I followed that message. And then I learned a lot about, you know, just make sure you please everybody else. So I was a huge people pleaser. And I had all these negative messages. When we go out, we used to think it was unsafe. My parents would be like, don't go, you know, don't go out at night. It's not safe. And so, you know, all these fear-based messages and this sense of lack. I came from a sense of lack. So the one thing I did that really changed my life, after reading all these books and kind of starting to, the funny thing is I literally put a rubber band around my wrist. And when I was walking around, I started saying, I can craft better thoughts. And I'm like, people would say, how are you? And I'd say, I'm magnificent and I'm fantastic. And you started using all the superlatives. And that was great for a while. It started helping me elevate and change my vibration a little bit. But the truth is I was really sad on the inside. So one thing I did do, I was broken. I was a one-winged bird. And so, I mean, I was a bird who couldn't fly. And so what she told me to do, one of her instructions was march off to this place called Hoffman Institute. And it's in California, in, you know, the beautiful wine country, you know, just up the street in California. And I did that. She said, go there, because what they're going to do is they're going to allow you to be you and not run around as a little mini version of mom and dad. And so I went to Hoffman. It's a 7-day, I call it emotional rehab, because that's for people who have big issues that need to be fixed and changed. And for 7 days, there's no TV, there's no cell phone, you have no communication with the outside world. It's you, your teacher, and this lovely group of people that you happen to be with that week. And you recraft you from the core messages, the little nuggets and seeds that got stuck that said, I'm not a good girl, or I'm a bad person, or I can't speak the truth, or who I really am as a human being. My essence is somehow flawed or off. And all of those were broken with me. So you go through these incredible exercises, and it's very physical. Some of it's very, very, it's all very spiritual. A lot of it's tons of emotions. I mean, you're basically crying for the first 3 days, and then all of a sudden, you know, the light comes out, and, oh, you know, I am okay. And I came back like this brand new bouncing baby soul. And having left that program, I was a different person from the inside. And I said, okay, you know what? First step. She said be an actor, which I'd always loved, but I said, let's go do this thing. So I marched off, and I found the first, you know, it took me a while to pull myself together because I had the kids and everything, but I found my first audition, and it was for Oliver. Musical Oliver. It was on my birthday again, so an entire year had passed now. I kind of kept going through mulling, and after a year later, I'm like, I'm ready to show up for my first audition. I was still really overweight. So the first thought is, wait a minute, no. Actors are supposedly thin. They're probably skilled, talented, and they probably, you know, have had some training. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm 190 pounds. I love this acting thing, but I haven't done it in 20 years, and I probably stunk, you know? So all these bad messages start coming in again about how I couldn't do this thing. And I said, no, no, no. You know what? What you think about, you bring about. And I held on to that thought and showed up for my first audition 20 years after I'd ever been on stage, and these people sat in front of me, and they said, sing me a song. Thinking, uh-oh, that's bad news. So I only knew one song, and that was Wouldn't It Be Loverly, which is, you know, from a completely different show. It was from My Fair Lady. And I, you know, I just kind of squeaked out the worst song you ever heard in your entire life. And I'm thinking to myself, my hands start shaking, my knees start knocking, and I thought I was going to throw up. But I did it. I squeaked it out, and they looked at me with that look like, you know, Simon Cowell gives you that look like, don't give up your day job, you know, get out of here. So I kind of start to slink over towards the door. I thought, okay, I better leave. These people are horrified at what I just did. And the director somehow popped up and said, you know what, why don't you read for the part of Nancy? I'm like, wait, thought to myself, oh, that's the lead. That's the lead of this play. And I'm like, no, what you think about, you bring about, right? So I came back, grabbed the script, and somehow this like cockney human being came into me, and I started doing this beautiful Cockney accent and talking about Oliver and, you know, oh, Oliver, Bill won't beat you so badly, and don't, you know, Fagin will be fine. And I started doing this whole thing. And somehow they all perked up and they kind of had a little smile on their face, and I said thank you, and then I went out and I celebrated, because it took so much courage just for me to show up, and I was so proud of myself that I just showed up. It didn't even matter what the outcome was anymore. So after that, you know, I waited to see what would happen, because I kept thinking, you know, wait, maybe I'll get the lead. This would be fantastic. So I waited and waited and waited and waited, and, you know, maybe about 6 days later, I was like, you know what, that's it. I'm not getting this part. This is never going to happen. That was a really bad audition anyway, so you probably don't deserve it, but whatever. So I just thought, you know, I'll make a new plan, and I'll come back next time with a new audition, with a new play, and I'll be better prepared. But right when I gave up and surrendered, the phone call came in, and they said, we'd like to offer you a part. And I'm like, yes, Nancy, Nancy, Nancy. They're like, we want to offer you the part of Townsperson 1. And I'm like, yay! Because I was now an actor.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? Gosh darn it, I did it. I mean, I was ill-prepared. I looked terrible. I probably sounded like a cat that was being run over. I mean, it was horrible. But I made it. And so from then, one thing led to another. I stayed in it. I acted my little heart out. I lost 30 pounds just being on stage because it was so much fun. And I felt like I was so much more on purpose. And the weight just literally fell off. And I was smiling from ear to ear. And I was finding for the first time what it felt like to actually kind of pursue something that was on my chart for my life's work. And just enjoyed myself, and as the years have evolved, I've become a SAG actor, and now I'm in a movie with Paul Sorvino that's going to be coming out next month. So, it's
all... Well, that's
all
wonderful, and I think an important point that you brought out that I just want to stress for the listeners is, and you said it in several different ways, but it's when we get closer to what it is that kind of lights our heart on fire, that really is a passion, that makes us feel more in line with who we truly are. Like you said, 30 pounds came off because you were actually living a more happy, fulfilled existence going through the process. And most of us spend a lot of time trying to change how we swim upstream instead of realizing we don't have to swim upstream. We can choose to go with the current and be who we are. And I think that that's an important part that comes out in The Real Brass Ring. One thing I wanted to go back to also is when you were talking about the Hicks, in pages 17 through 20, you also give the shortcuts for living well, which came out of your interactions with the Hicks that you put together. And I would encourage people to seek that out, to get all of those ideas for what they can do themselves to live well right now in the moment, because the subtitle of your book of Change Your Life Now is the important part, I think, for everybody. So now you've moved on and you've started moving out of your corporate career. You now start dealing, you also shifted your relationship with your daughters, because instead of, you talk about your father, but in the book you also talk about how you were carrying the two imprints, and most of us are. The imprint, of course, of your father, here's the career and here's how you live a happy and fulfilled life. You do one of these careers. And then your mother, which was, and now I have to take care of everybody, which was never taking care of you. And you've learned about those imprints of yourself. And now you start really opening up also to your daughters. But can you let people know where you went to now with your 16-year relationship?
Yes, yes. And the point I'd love to reinforce is those 14 shortcuts changed my life. Because my background is, you know, in business and marketing, and I was able to, I've always had executives say to me, you know, just give me the bottom line. You know, they don't want to hear all the stuff. They don't want to read 10,000 books. They just want the bottom line. So one of the tools I created are the 14 shortcuts. And I said, okay, of everything I've ever read, of all the millions of metaphysical books and philosophy books and everything I've touched on that's worked, what is the bottom line? And that's what those 14 shortcuts are. And I was able to bring those not only to myself, they're fast, easy reminders about how you can make a shift today in this minute that will raise that vibration. So you can have this heart on fire. You can have your resonant value so much higher. And like you have, you know, at the beginning of the show, the good vibration song, you can feel it from the inside. And so what I was able to do on two levels, number one, and I think this is one of the most important things, and I'm so glad you brought it up because I haven't had the chance to really discuss this too often in some of the interviews I've had. I think one of the most important things I was able to do by shifting my vibration is to help my kids. And so I had three children, and I think the first one who did not have the benefit of having me go through all these shifts and changes, she was there when I was the unhappy mom who had to, like, bite my lip so I wouldn't feel like I wanted to cry all the time. But then I had two more children, and I really went through these shifts so that they could see happy mom, healthy mom, mom in a relationship where two people love each other, and some of the basics, because we are imprinting, just as you mentioned. And it used to just break my heart that I was showing them the example of what I didn't want to demonstrate. I mean, it kills you on the inside when you're a good person and you know you're not being happy-go-lucky person and fulfilled happy life and showing that to these kids, because what are they going to do? They're going to suck that right in and they're going to repeat. So what happened is that I realized that, and this was the hardest part, how do you shift your relationship? How do you get out of a 16-year relationship and say, you know, this isn't working for me? So I did the brave thing. I actually had, you know, my husband at the time and I had a very fraternal relationship. He was a good person. I was a good person. No one was doing anything wrong. There was no outlandish cheating and horrible things going on. It was just that we didn't have a heartfelt connection. It was kind of that simple. So that made it even harder. It wasn't like I was stomping around angry and he was stomping around angry. And so I just said to myself one day, looking at my kids, I'm like, I have to demonstrate to them what it looks like to have a loving relationship, a heart connection. And so I brought it up to my husband at the time. It was really kind of simple. I said, you know what, this isn't working for me. And I think we need to end this. And the weird thing is he had like a one word answer. He said, okay. He was like, you know, he agreed. The hard part is the kids, of course, and the emotions. There is no divorce that ever is happy. I've never witnessed one. I don't know if there are any out there. They're always difficult, but the good news is they can be healthy, and that's what I like to promote. So we kept, we didn't do everything right. Trust me, there's some pretty harrowing stories in the book, and one of them is about how we kind of lived together in the family house for a while. We were not completely upfront because I didn't want to hurt the kids. I was trying to be the good mom and trying to pretend to be the perfect mom still until I finally came clean. So, you know, it wasn't the perfect story, but it did turn out so that I do demonstrate now to them. We have probably the most healthy family I can imagine. I have beautiful kids who are perfectly fully expressed. You know, they're in their truth. They have 100% support from me, and I'm now in a new relationship. We've been together for 7 years. We have the eternal, I say eternally engaged. We've been engaged for 7 years. It works for us, and they get all of the key messages. For example, one of the shortcuts is that you have to tend to yourself first, just as you had mentioned, learning about what do you need right now? What needs aren't being met? We talk in these kind of words at home. You know, my son, I'll say, okay, I see a crabby pants walking around. What's going on? What needs aren't being met? And he's like, yeah, well, my teacher said something today I didn't care about. I'm like, well, let's talk about it. You know, tell me what's going on. Is there some, do you need any support in this? Are you good? He's like, no, Mom, I can handle it. I'm going to bring it up. I'm going to talk to him myself. Like, good, you let me know if you need help. So the nice thing is we are so fully expressed in this household that nothing gets stuffed. And it's all about you can have your emotions, you can have your feelings, and then we, you know, help each other, support each other. But you don't do it. What happened in my family is we had that giant rug, and everybody stuffed everything under the rug, so the rug's like two stories tall. And if anybody, God forbid, if anybody really pulled that the rug off, the whole house might explode because that's all the stuff we couldn't talk about and could never share. And, of course, I shared the whole thing when I wrote the book, so my family wasn't exactly happy about that. But That didn't go over too well, by the way, Salazar. But that's for book number two. The reaction to the first one was shocking to me.
I think the important part that you're mentioning there, and for people to look at this in their own lives, is that most of us, I think all of us, but I'm going to say most of us, give some of them exceptions, have a rug that things have gotten stuffed under, whether it was in our life growing up, whether it was in our adult life, whether it was in our relationship life, our career life, or whatever else. And for me, that's the way we create festering sores that always result, and I'm an emotional being. I'm an Aries, a Sagittarius, and a Leo. I've got more fire than most people put in their grills when they're doing their food. That's a festering sore that has to come out. So it comes out in one form or another. It either comes out in bad health for yourself by holding it in, or it comes out in explosions towards others, neither of which are very productive. And so what you're sharing is, I think, is beautiful about you have a fully expressed household where people speak openly and honestly, here's how I'm feeling, here's what's going on with me, here's how I want to deal with this. And so it doesn't turn into, you're the bane of my existence, why was I ever born, which is what we see so often expressed in movies, in books, and in life.
Exactly. So, every single movie, and we call it speak your peace. And we say, okay, speak your peace. And they'll say it in healthy terms, like, well, when you said this, I felt hurt, or I felt like you didn't listen to me, or, you know, it really got to me. It made me feel bad. And it allows the other person to acknowledge it and say, oh, I'm so sorry. You know what? I didn't mean that, which is 99% of the time. We don't mean to be hurtful. And so we have had such honest discussions, and then we support each other in it. So you know how sometimes there's always little family dynamics, we can't pretend everything's perfect, but sometimes if one sister says something about the other sister, I'll say, okay, well, when you said that, let's all talk together now, because you said that, you hurt her feelings, she wants to know that she's, we have one that's out of the house, and she comes in and out a lot, and you say, you know, she wants to know she's welcome, and she come back whenever she wants, and when you said that, you were having a crabby day. You know, we kind of make it light, too. You don't have to make it all so serious, you know, so we're saying, I mean, literally say, you're wearing crabby pants, you're wearing, like, sour pants, it's like, why are these, you know, why am I seeing, you know, why do I see the face turned down, you know, what's going on? And so when you kind of bring that approach to people, they don't have the chance to fester. And that's the nice thing. You can have that emotion. And I actually had my daughter say to me, you know, a lot of true confessions here. I actually had my daughter say recently, something happened to her. She was very upset. She had like a mini breakup. And she starts getting upset. And I'm like, well, let me do a tapping session on you. Let's do this. Let's do that. And she goes, Mom, let me be sad. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Be sad. You know, I want to fix, you know, that's my job. I feel like, I'm like, you're right. I'm not going to fix. I'm going to let you be sad. Get that out of your system. You're totally right. And so when you have that kind of like clarity in the moment, you're allowed to express. And then later on, if she wants to go back and get that seed, because those little seeds, those little nuggets that get stuck inside of us, that's the bus driver who's driving your bus down the street.
Mm-hmm. I want to remind folks that we're talking to Diane Bischoff James. She's the author of The Real Brass Ring, Change Your Life Course Now. It's about her story of going through a midlife crisis just prior to the age of 40, of really looking around and saying, nothing I've done is really working, and how do I change it now? Which for the listeners means you can change anytime, anywhere. It's just up to you to make the choice. But see, when I said earlier, Diane, too, that your book was frightening, your book was so reminiscent in so many ways of my life and even things going on around me now. I've spent my life going through a series of highs and lows and highs and lows. And you were just reminding me of everything that was pulled out from underneath me and how I'm on that process of going back up. And yet at the same time, I realize that it's the journey of all of us. And the fact that you came out of this so positive, so powerful, so strong, and really rebuilt everything is a real role model for us. But you also mentioned that we know, and I've mentioned that in talking with you, that we always know when things aren't working, but we choose not to deal with them or confront with them unless there is some catalyst. Could you talk a little bit about that process when you were first confronted by Sonia at age 38? And did you actually go into any shame of, you know, I knew it, and I should have done something about it?
The shame and blame. That was our mantra. But that was, again, kind of a family mantra, shame and blame. I was horrified, and I'll tell you why. And this is the kind of language that I hope in the future that we can all have this kind of open language and we know which of our buttons are getting pushed, because we all have, and I look at it seriously as a palette. There is a palette of lessons that we're all learning. It's the same palette. We're all on different parts of it. Some people have one that's like pushed hard, one that's totally depressed, one that's shoved down underneath. But we all are working off the same palette. And the one thing that hit on me as far as my palette of lessons and of fear was failure, fear of failure. It's as if somebody said, and I have that button, that's one of mine, and I've had it since I was little, you know, couldn't, you know, had to get the best grades, and if I didn't get all A's, that would mean I was a failure, because that's how I used failure. I used the lack of failure, as in success, to try to say, look at me, I'm good, right? Look at me, I'm good, right? And when someone says, you've made a complete mess of it, and nothing that you've accomplished is on path, that hurt. It really hurt at a core level, it hurt at an emotional level, it hurt at a physical level, and it hurt at an intellectual level too, because I was thinking, how could I be so smart and miss this? Was there a real brass ring? And she goes, your real brass ring, and this is where how the book title came out. She said, your real brass ring is coming by, and you better grab it before it's too late. And I'm thinking, okay, a smart woman would have seen the brass ring, right? You know, Did somebody come knocking at my door with a ring and I didn't grab it? You know, was it going down the street and I didn't run out and go like chasing after the ice cream truck or something? What was it? So I think that we all have, and this is kind of the beauty of it. It's also, I think, the part that's a little challenging. The beauty is that I think inside, as part of our spiritual selves, we have the answers. Usually when we're in childhood, and this is where all the clues come in, and part of the workshop that I'm going to have this Monday, I have a lecture on Friday at Conscious Life, that's going to be Friday from 7 to 8, and then I have the workshop. We break through some of this, and it's going to be for 2.5 hours, and we get to the truth. In fact, the name of the workshop is Breakthrough to the Real You. You know, I don't have the answers for other people. Sonia had some of the, she brought up some key issues for me, but she doesn't have the answers. I have the answers within me. You have the answers within you. Every person listening has the answers inside. So sometimes it's that little catalyst. It's somebody who asked you a really important question, like, what did you like to do? You know, what can you say? And this is the really simple one. I use one of these exercises in the workshop. What can you honestly say I love to do? Because when you use that word love, like L-O-V-E, and you can feel it, your face turns up, your eyes get brighter, your pupils dilate a little bit, and you feel like your whole resonant value increases, that's what you should be doing. I know it sounds so simple, but one of our exercises is we create an inventory of everything we love to do. We do a lot of visualization, a lot of dyads where we work with other people where they kind of prompt and bring out the truth in you, within you. But sometimes if you just say, I really love, I'll be honest, I love the little red convertible. There is nothing more fun than putting the top down on a warm day and going down Lakeshore Drive in Chicago and looking at the lake on one side and the buildings on the other. I mean, it's just, and then playing Meatloaf, that's my thing. I like to, you know, or I play Journey, or I play all my 80s bands. You know, that's what gets me, I start smiling, I start laughing, I sing along, probably badly, but I sing along. And so that's when your excitement turns on. And what's really fun in these kind of exercises, whether you do it with a partner, whether you just do it alone, is you can feel your own shifting. But what's really fun is to look out, because I've had the chance to go all over the country and offer these workshops and go to expos and meet so many beautiful people and do private coaching. I can see the light go on. We can all see each other's lights go on. And here's the nice thing about that. Once you actually start doing, I love to garden, I love to take a walk, I love to pet my cat, what it doesn't matter what it is, you have just increased your resonant value, and then the person near you, whoever comes into your circle, theirs goes up automatically. So the nice thing is you don't just do it for yourself. You do it for everybody around you. And I always imagine that we have this wonderful world where people have this, like, they just have a radiance about them. They radiate positivity. They know that, and trust me, it's been ups and downs. It's even been ups and downs since I wrote the book, and the next one will illustrate. I want to get real, raw and real with this thing. It doesn't just happen overnight. It's just going back to the quote from James Allen again. It's how many times did you fall down? I mean, I had this wonderful client come and say to me, private client, and just said, you know, I broke free. I started my own metaphysical business. I had a bookstore. I had all these great things, and the business failed. And now I'm the biggest failure on the planet, and I had to close it. And I looked at her, and I said, you're my hero. What are you talking about? You're not a failure. You're a hero because you had the courage to do something that turned your light on. And, okay, so the first one didn't work, and then she explained to me why. And there were all these, like, negative influences. Her family wasn't supporting her. They doubled the rent. The location was already kind of not – it was kind of more in a place where it was way more fundamental, and it didn't really support a metaphysical type of business. And I said – the only thing that you need to do now is to try again, and this time it will be twice as easy. And you cannot, you can have a pity party for a day, yes, fine. Feel bad, like my daughter said, I want to cry, Mom. Yeah, cry, feel bad, get it out of your system, and then come back to me with your next plan, because we've got to get this going. This is what's right for you. This is what the world needs from you. And so she just kind of looked at me, and she said, did you just say I'm a hero? I'm like, yes, you're a hero. And I bow to you. You're doing the right thing for you and for the world. I don't care if it didn't work the first time. It's going to work number second time. It might work the third. But for sure, it's going to work the fourth. So, you know, maybe it takes a couple of rounds. So that's the kind of excitement that I love to see. And I love to be able to help people. But you can do it with yourself. You can ask yourself some really simple questions tonight. Go home and write a list. I love to, and let your thoughts, do not think about it, feel it, whatever simple thing it is. And that's how you spend your time during the week. So I try to make sure now I give it the I love it hour. I try to have an I love it hour every day. Now, I'll be honest, I don't do it every day, but I try to get there where I took at least 1 hour to do something that I love to do, because it changes my entire day. It changes my week. It changes my month. And it also changes the family, too, because they see happy mom. So.
And I think going back to a couple of things you said, I just want a couple of comments. One is, listening to you speak, of course, you hear the light come through. You hear the love of what you're doing come through. And I think it's a good, speaking of heroes, it's a good role model for everyone who's listening to really hear that here you were 15 years ago, essentially the rug pulled out from underneath you, feeling like a complete failure on what externally would have looked to other people like a successful life, and having to rebuild yourself in that time. And people can hear the light and life coming through you as you speak about it. And I think that that's important for people to grasp. And the second thing is we forget, because we think everybody's success is immediate, we forget we learn better by the things that are less successful than we want them to be. We learn best by those things that don't turn out the way we wanted them to, if we take the time to examine what we learned from it. Not what we did wrong, what we learned from it. And I think that's also important for us to grasp in rebuilding our life at any moment in time, no matter what happens. So let's go back to the LA Conscious Expo, which is this weekend. You said you have a presentation Friday evening, the 19th, which is when it starts. Did you say at 7 p.m.?
That's from 7 to 8, and it's the title of the presentation is Live Your Best Life Ever. And so we go over some of the 14 shortcuts, and we start to really, really initially kind of dig into who are you really, what's authentic, how do you get clear, get going, and get happy.
And then Monday the 22nd is your workshop from 2 to 4:30 p.m. Pacific, the Breakthrough to the Real You, which is after the primary expo is over. Those are kind of the after workshops from the expo?
Yes, those are the post-conference workshops.
And we want to remind folks again that we're talking to Diane Bishop James, the author of The Real Brass Ring, Change Your Life Course Now. You can visit her at diane.net, and that's Diane with two N's, D-I-A-N-N-E.net, to find out more about what you're doing. So one additional thought here, Diane, this comes from some of the material provided, is that when we start to change our life, even in the book you talked about when you got a prescription for Prozac and your journey through that part of it, and that was kind of shifting some of that depression. When do we take charge of ourselves in our own mind and in our own heart, and when do we use other things to aid us along the way, such as a doctor or such as prescriptions or such as something else, and not just our own mind and our own heart?
Well, that's an excellent question, so thank you. I have had so many physical issues that I've had to work through, and you know, I'll just start with the plantar fasciitis. One day, my feet, I was a cheerleading coach too on top of all that, and I was running around the gym, and all of a sudden I had this flash of pain on my heel, and it was something that I thought, okay, that was strange, and I kind of ignored it. I mean, it started building over a week or two. One night, I went to bed, and I woke up the next morning, and both of my feet were in excruciating pain. I felt like I had to walk on my tiptoes, like a kind of like a toddler, like a baby. I couldn't really take a full step. Well, I'm not the first one to go to the doctor. So, in fact, I'm the last person to go to the doctor, because I have explored so many things and so many tools. So I start to look, you know, I start reading about Louise Hay, and I really looked into it. What does it mean when your feet hurt like that? And she basically, what it means is that you're not moving forward, that you actually are stuck in the feet, because the feet carry you. So I looked into that, and so I always like to really go into what is the body trying to tell you, you know, so kind of understand it from a metaphysical perspective and spend some time. I just kind of, you know, put on higher heels is what I did, and I kept walking around, but the pain just got worse and worse and worse. And at some point, I always go to the inside. You know, your heart knows when you can handle it and when it's time to seek assistance. And I am completely into trying homeopathics. I mean, I tried acupuncture. I tried acupressure. I went to the chiropractor, and she pulled my toes. I mean, I tried my own self-massage. I went to all these holistic things. And eventually, I did go to the doctor. Now, here's the funny part about that. You know, when you have those kind of some of these injuries, the doctors usually can do two things. They can give you a pill, or they can cut it somehow, do some kind of surgery. And so with that case and the feet, in the case of the feet, the funny thing is I went to the doctor, and honest to God, he said, well, you have such tight calves that we're going to have to cut your Achilles and open up the sheath around the Achilles. Now, what might happen is your foot will flop the rest of your life. But it could also be fine. And I looked at him, I'm like, my foot's going to flop for the rest of my life? I'm like, seriously, did you just say that? Because there is no way. Again, I can get really, you know, you say you have a lot of those fire signs. I can dig down into my little Aries within and go, oh, heck no. You are not going to cut my Achilles tendon and have my foot flop, and I'll look like some kind of strange clown, or I'll be unable to walk upstairs. You know, I'm like, no, there is no way that's going to happen. So I can explore even on the medical side and then decide whether I'm willing to, if that makes sense for me or not. And that completely did not make sense. There was no way the guy was going to cut the back of my leg. So what I decided to do is to get really serious on a different front, and I went for PT. You know, and spent honestly over about probably 6 months in physical therapy with the feet. And eventually I did a little combo of everything. You know, I used the stuff at home, ice, simple things, and then found yoga. And yoga is what created balance in the body. You know, I was able to stretch out the Achilles that was so tight. I have special shoes. I have special insoles. I do everything known to man to try to help and protect that area. But I was able to use kind of a hodgepodge of what worked for me. So I always recommend, you know, start with your homeopathic, start with your own research, start with your insight in your heart, and then if you need to, for goodness sakes, go to the doctor, see what they have to offer, see if that makes sense for you. They offered me shoulder, I had shoulder problems too, and I did the surgery for that case because it was ripped in there and it needed to be fixed. And so, you know, some you have to use your, you know, it's kind of like using your heart and your mind in both of those cases, and you have to make really good choices. But The number one thing that I didn't realize is we're not supposed to be in pain. The body's perfect state is that of health. And I was in pain all the time. And so I somehow thought that that was normal and you just kind of ignore it and keep going on. But the truth is that when the body is in alignment and I started doing things, when you start doing things that take care of you, which could be a couple of really important things, you know, you need to do some, as we get older, we lose like a quarter pound of muscle a year. We all do. It's just the way that we're kind of designed. So you have to do some strengthening, and we're talking whatever works for you, whether it be some kind of, you know, through yoga, Tai Chi, Qigong, or whether you want to do Pilates, or they have like all those new methods out there, the daily, all those different daily method and all those different things, where you get into some kind of strengthening, even light, and some kind of gross motor. You have to move the large muscles of your body at least 20 minutes, two times a day. And that's because it moves the blood, it moves the circulation, it keeps your lymph nodes more healthy, and you just plain old feel better. So simple ways, whatever works for you, whether it's jumping up on a trampoline or running outside or dancing or whatever it is. But if you don't keep the strengthening up as we mature, and we're all maturing ever so slightly, it's really important that you take responsibility for that, because otherwise that's how people get hurt, especially when you get older. And I was just laughing the other day because I realized I'm probably the only 50 person in their 50s who just took up skiing and surfing, which I don't do either very well, but they're so much fun that, and it's really hard, by the way, they jump up on that board. And I'm like, just what? Like, go from laying to standing in this perfect little squat. And I'm like, all right, it's going to take some practice getting there. But, you know, I give it the best shot I have, and I fall a lot, but it's a lot of fun, and, you know, and so, but it's really good core work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's never too late, and that's what the real brass ring means. The world is filled with infinite possibilities, and it is never too late, because the middle years can be the very best years of your life. I mean, they certainly have been for me, and we all can be living proof. That's what I want to create this, like a roster eventually, and like have a site where everybody's living proof of how they can transform and keep showing each other and helping each other and supporting each other, and how we can all show that these infinite possibilities can turn out to be just magnificent and fun and exciting, and we can all have this, you know, beautiful life that we came here to have.
Well, I want to let folks know, once again, we've been talking with Diane Bischoff James, the author of The Real Brass Ring, Change Your Life Course Now. You can go to diane.net, diane.net, to read more about Diane, to get a copy of The Real Brass Ring. And it's about, for those who don't remember, the merry-go-round you would go by and grab the brass ring. And it's about getting your brass ring before the merry-go-round passes it by. Diane's going to be at the LA Conscious Life Expo starting on Friday. She'll have a session, a presentation Friday night the 19th at 7 to 8 p.m. And she'll also be doing a workshop on Monday after the formal expo is over. It's Monday, February 22nd from 2 to 4:30 p.m. of Breakthrough to the Real You. Diane, this has been a pleasure speaking with you, and I appreciate you taking the time on your, I'm assuming, cold Chicago day. How's the weather up there?
Oh, we're thrilled. It's 30. we're very happy.
Okay. So please hold on one second. I want to let the rest of the folks know we'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Arnie Buss, speaking of listening, and Israel Hurtado with Spirit Talk. This has been Good Vibrations Radio with Solazar. Our guest, Diane Bischoff-James, the author of The Real Brass Ring. This will replay again this evening, 5 p.m. Pacific time, right here on Radio Monterey. And you can also hear replays on the weekend. But we'll be back live at 5 to 6 p.m. tomorrow evening with Israel Hurtado Spirit Talk and Dr. Arnie Buss, Speaking of Listening. Thank you for listening. Namaste.
Gotta keep those loving good vibrations happening with her.